back together again, you and I chatting it up, wrapping up a busy week, Friday, May the 15th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcome to Connecticut Mirror reporter Mark Pazniokas to the show to break down the big weekend nominating conventions for state Democrats and Republicans. I also had a few of my own thoughts for Connecticut's registered Republican voters. CBS News Capitol Hill reporter Torian Small joining us to talk about the ongoing redistricting battles across the U.S., while University of New Haven Associate Professor of National Security and Political Science Dr. Matthew Schmidt dropped by again. He talked about the numerous world hotspots. It is a big weekend for all us political junkies here in Connecticut. You know, people, like guys and gals like me that do these sorts of shows. And if you're into policy, if you're into the whole reportage of this stuff, this is like popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jacks, pork rinds. Those are keto. This is what you want to munch while you're watching this coverage. And a guy who's going to be covering it is a guy who's made quite a name for himself over the years, one of the best of the writers in Hartford, the Capitol Bureau Chief, Mark Pazniokas, from the Connecticut Mirror, one of the publications I urge you to check out on a regular basis. Hey, Mark, it's Paul again at WICC. How are you?
I am fine. I just arrived at the Mohegan Sun for the convention, and your phone call has coaxed me to step outside into the fresh air.
Take a big deep breath, Mark, because you're going to need it. Two distinctly different, Mark, scenarios here, but kind of the same. Do you think we're looking at emerging primaries after both the Democrats and Republicans this weekend or not?
Well, Josh Elliott, the consensus is he's easily going to exceed the 15%. Mm-hmm. The question for Representative Elliott is, will he qualify for the public financing that allows him to wage a credible campaign against Ned Lamont? He says he's getting closer and closer, and he's got until mid-July to qualify. But the problem is, the later you go, the money becomes less effective. Mm-hmm. You know, most folks seem to think that Bessie McCoy, she walked in here far short of the 15%.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Aaron Stewart dropping out, there's a bunch of delegates available. Now, former Mayor Stewart was quite clear. She urged her people to support Ryan Fazio. So, I mean, we'll find out, you know, soon enough.
Yeah.
There'll be with a two-way race, there'll be one ballot tomorrow, and they'll resolve that. They have some minor drama about Lieutenant Governor. Mm-hmm. And this afternoon, they'll be nominating candidates for Congress. And there looks like there are contests in only the 4th and the 5th mm-hmm. of the 5 districts.
Mark Pazniokas is the guest. A couple more minutes with him from the Connecticut Mirror. And Mark, to the Republican side of things, I mean, everybody, I think, with a brain says, okay, Ryan Fazio's the nominee. But Mark, you and I know, because I watch some of the groups on Facebook and social media, the Republicans have this wonderful talent, Mark, and I'm actually a registered Republican, so I did the first half of my show on this. The GOP does have a wonderful talent, Mark, does it not, over the past several cycles of taking what should be the simple and making it difficult? And I see online there are elements of the Republican voters in this state that say, hey, the nominee should be McCoy. Do you think there's going to be any sort of an insurrection in the party here or not?
You have to take the social media stuff with a grain of salt. It
yeah.
does represent a distinct vein of opinion in the party, but you always have to question how many people are behind those postings. Because if you look at them, you know, it's not exactly legions and legions of people. But, you know, Betsy... I mean, you're absolutely right. The Republican Party does have that tendency. Now,
yes.
There's a little bit of that the Democratic Party this year,
yeah.
although it's not quite to the same tone. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a certain ugliness among the factions and the Republicans, and it's funny that it was almost like you had overheard a conversation I was having 10 minutes ago with a prominent elected Republican.
Uh-huh.
We were talking about that very thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to get people to just play nice and, you know,
and come.
No, I mean,
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, and it is a dynamic. You know, when parties are in hard times, they do tend to turn on each other to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a bad run, and you know, it's not like this was a solidly blue state forever.
Yeah,
you look at election results in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won half the seats in the state Senate, and they came five short of the House. And then came the midterms of 2018, and mm-hmm. it's just been downhill ever since.
Yeah.
President Trump contributed to that.
He
has certainly been the best organizer the Democratic Party has ever seen in blue states. And it's been a problem for the Republicans. The more moderate Republicans, you know, the ones who historically were environmentalists, some of them were actually active in abortion rights.
Yeah.
You know, there were plenty of Republicans who were early backers of Planned Parenthood, that kind of thing. And, you know, so, I mean, this party is in search of its identity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there a lot of the people I talk to, it's a question of getting through this cycle and then seeing what the party is about in 2 years when it's a presidential cycle and mm-hmm. President Trump will be moving on.
Mark, one final thing before we let you go. On the Democratic side, a lot of people have said both on and off the air to me, Elliott, yeah, okay, he represents a progressive side, but no shot. He may not have a shot, Mark, but people were laughing at Zohran Mamdani, and look what happened. And basically on the strength of social media, right, TikTok videos, people also said Luke Bronin, oh, he'll never be John Larson at a nominating convention. Look what happened. So, yeah, well, I think Ned Lamont survives, but ...
Well, I will quote a Democratic observer about, comparing this race to Mamdani, and that observer is none other than Josh Elliott, because he made a point to me when he started this. He said, I'm going up against Ned Lamont, who most people like, even if they don't agree with him on everything. He's a likable guy. Andrew Cuomo was a lot of things, but I don't think anybody mistook him for a nice guy. And that contributed. And yes, Mamdani was truly a phenomenon as far as using all the modern tools, social media among them.
Yep.
You have to be careful in comparing, one race to another. But I think the thing that is true, there is something in the air this year. There's something in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Bronin taking out Larson was not a classic example of that. Luke Bronin is hardly the insurgent outsider, the two-term mayor of Hartford.
Corporate money.
Absolutely. But he did tap in to this desire for generational change.
Mm-hmm.
Congressman Larson, he turned 78 in July.
Yeah.
Ned Lamont turned 70. He is 72. I don't think the governor has had the same questions that, some of the older members of Congress have faced,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very funky year, and an Elliott Lamont primary, would be interesting. Because again, when I look at these campaigns and these elections, the big picture for me is always what does it say about the identity of the party at this moment? And a Lamont Elliott debate, for example, an election would certainly explore that question.
Mm-hmm. And we thank you and look forward to your coverage over the weekend. Mark Pazniokas out east at the casino with the Republicans. Mark, thanks. Appreciate the time. We'll chat down the road. Take care.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Mark Pazniokas, the Connecticut Mirror. Check it out, ctmirror.org. And he's out at the casino ready to cover a bunch of Republicans. All right, we have a reach day of Friday here heading into the weekend. Let me, if I can, offer a little bit of I don't know what you would call this, maybe a little bit of a public service announcement, if I can, maybe heading into the weekend. They're called PSAs, the Smokey Bear and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America and the American Heart Association, public service announcements. You hear them instead of sometimes commercial announcements, and they're basically for nonprofits. They tell people, hey, there's some commonality we have here, so let's make sure we make good decisions, yada, 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 in our lives. But allow me, if you will, to do a public service announcement, and let me be partisan here for just a moment, because I don't hide my party affiliation, although I do enjoy good policy from both sides. You folks know that I do not hide my policy affiliation or party affiliation. Many of you know that the prevalence of the Connecticut Republican Party to not actually go for someone who can actually win an election, especially the past, 16 years that we're coming up on a generation here. Allow me, if you will, give me a moment, if you will allow me to do this. Now, we all know that Aaron Stewart's campaign has been suspended. There are more chapters coming up with that in the next days and weeks, and I really hope that whatever she is dealing with here after this with her family and law enforcement, I really hope that she is adjudicated fairly, she can make restitution, and life can go on for her and her family. But allow me, if you will, a political public service announcement to my fellow Republicans, if you'd like me to do this. Doesn't matter whether you want me to, because I'm going to anyway. It's my damn show. Heading into the weekend conventions here, the Democrats are at the Bushnell tomorrow only. I think the Republicans are assembling today and tomorrow at a Mohegan Sun. I am begging on rhetorical hands and knees. I'm not actually doing that because if I get down there, it takes me a half an hour to get up. Although we're getting better. Lost another 5 pounds. We're getting better. Okay, now, I am begging you, my fellow Republicans, I am begging you, please refrain from the circular firing squad on this one, okay? I'm begging you, as we go into the weekend where it's all but concluded now that Ryan Fazio is going to emerge from the convention with easily, it looks like, the party endorsement. But now the notion is that one of our guests from the past couple of weeks, former New York Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCoy, is likely going to qualify for a primary. So the primary will likely be Betsy McCoy and Ryan Fazio versus Ryan Fazio and Aaron Stewart. Now, the Republican Party, over the past 10, 15 years, has done a great job of looking at each other, saying, oh, what would you like me to aim? What would you like me to shoot? No, wait, we shouldn't be shooting at each other, but we're going to. And I already see it starting online. Now, we do not need a repeat. And if you don't like the fact that I'm saying this, I don't freaking care. Because somebody's got to tell you this. As a dear friend of mine in the business used to say when he was having his office meetings, sit down, shut up. This is not a discussion. Okay? Nothing personal. It's just business. We do not need, and I doubt this would happen, but we do not need a, we mean it, what do you mean, me, we, Paul? No, I'm meaning we, me, like we, me as a member of the Republican Party in this state, okay, as a registered voter, because I like to vote in primaries, and I'm not a Democrat, so there you go. We do not need a replay of when the current state tax commissioner, Mark Boughton, was emerging from a Republican convention with a good record and an idea that he might have won the governorship in 2018. And then you know what happened with Bob Stefanowski and all that. Okay, we don't need that. That is circular firing squad material. That's not necessary. Okay? It's just not. We don't need the circular firing squad material again, that despite the fact that I hear she's a very nice lady and a very prolific fundraiser, that gave us Leora Levy back when, 4 years ago in 2022, as a Senate candidate against the seasoned titan of the U.S. Senate, Richard Blumenthal only because Mrs. Levy got a phone call from President Trump. The Republican Party in Connecticut does not need that. You need to take a look at whatever happens from the convention this weekend. And the Democrats have to do this too, by the way. But you have to look at what happens and say, all right, this person or that person or that person over there is the party endorsed candidate, but there's going to be a primary. All right. So all Republicans have to ask is the following. It's a simple question, three words pertaining to the general election. Once you get past the orgasmic love fest that are conventions, okay, who can win? Let me make it five words if you want a longer sentence. Who can win in November? Who can win in November? Five words. One, two, three, four, five. Who can win in November? And I suspect there will be a significant cadre of Republican voters in this state who are going to, on policy, not on personal attributes, not on the fact that you like her or don't like her. There are people who are going to say, on policy, I like Betsy McCoy, which you can. I'm not telling you you can't. Anybody who reaches that level, a former lieutenant governor, a former health policy person, a current columnist for the New York Post, a current host on Newsmax, whatever. That's a great resume. That's a resume that I will never come close to achieving. I just won't. Unless I hit some miracle-type lottery in life over my last 20 years here, which I don't think I will. But having said that, take a look at Ryan Fazio and take a look at Betsy McCoy. Two extremely intelligent people. Ryan is a dynamo for his age. He's only 36. Betsy McCoy's been around a little longer. But the thing is, you have to ask yourself, who has the best shot of defeating either Ned Lamont or Josh Elliott in November? We don't need another car crash like we had when everybody thought, hey, Mark Boughton's going to be the next governor. We don't need another freaking five-car pileup on the Merritt Parkway when people, for some GD reason, couldn't vote for Themis Claridis. Oh, you know, because she's dating the guy from Eversource. Oh, Themis may be pro-choice. Oh, my God. Perish the thought. Use your heads this time around, okay? Use your heads. Now, again, I'm not telling you exactly who to vote for, but you know what your vote should consist of? Who the freak can win in November? Now, if the two people advancing were going to be Aaron Stewart and Ryan Fazio, that was, up to about a week ago, going to be a tough question. Yes. Ask yourselves now. In light of what happened with Aaron Stewart and she not being in the primary, is that question still a hard one? All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Convention weekend coming up here. Oh, and by the way, you know I did my opening there on the Republicans in Connecticut telling them, don't screw this up. All right, I would really like to use another word. Don't blank this up, but if I did, you probably wouldn't hear me for 2 weeks. I'd be suspended, even though our digital delay can snuff out all bad words, but you never know. Maybe the thing goes kerput and kerplunk and whatever, whatever. And then our lawyer for the company has to write an apology letter to the FCC, but I won't say that. But don't blank this up, please. I'm begging you. Coming out of the convention, there's probably going to be a primary now, and there was always going to be a primary. There was always going to be Aaron Stewart v. Ryan Fazio, and likely not a third person, Ms. McCoy in there, Betsy McCoy. But now it's the growing consensus by what I've been reading and what I've been asking people that, yeah, Betsy McCoy will qualify for a primary. Good for her. I'm not telling her not to do anything that she isn't entitled to as somebody running for an elected office, but the voters of this state and the Republican voters who have been known to engage in circular firing squads, if there's any group of voters in this state that can screw the pooch, it's Republicans. Because if you notice, Democrats don't do that. Now, although you've got Josh Elliott, you know, sounding, if you heard John Kamal's interview or the news we had earlier today with Josh, looks like he's going to get the 15% and good on him. So unless you get, you know, Zohran Mamdani East, Ned Lamont is going to be the nominee. But man, Ryan Fazio is a dynamite, and so is Betsy McCoy. But you know what I'm trying to say here. Can ask yourselves this, and I respect the heck out of her. She was on the show last week. You know how I am. The more candidates, the better. But again, the Republicans have screwed up big time in the last several cycles. Tom Foley, nice guy, 0 for 2. Bob Stefanowski, nice guy, 0 for 2. Linda McMahon, nice person. I interviewed her once. Went very well. Spends gobs of money, or did, during her election chances, 0 for 2. Leora Levy, big-time Republican fundraiser, 0 for 1. Let's see, that's 2, 4, 6. That's 7. We don't need to make it 0 for 8. So I'm just telling you, because you know what? I think Ryan Fazio v. Ned Lamont is going to be a heck of a campaign. Look, Ryan is young. He's got the looks. He understands policy. His resume is impeccable. And I'm not saying that Ned Lamont doesn't have a good resume. Hey, the guy's a two-term guy that's won twice already. Incumbent, that's the word I was struggling for here. Haven't had my banana yet. Getting a little low sugar flush here. Two-term incumbent. So, yeah, he's accomplished, too, and with his business acumen as well. But what we don't need, and I'm already seeing it on Facebook, are the seeds being planted of the Republican voters, some of them who are dummies, are going to go out there and say, no, we need a real right-wing conservative to carry the conservative message. Oh, how's that turned out? Tell me, Gunga Din, how has that turned out since 2010? How did that turn out? Oh, man. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And can you be swayed? The question of the day I started with here today is, have you already decided on who you're voting for or against in this November's election? Now, you may say, well, geez, Paul, how can we decide on who we're voting for when we have two primaries staring us in the face? All right, yeah, I know what you mean. You may be a Democrat, and if there's a primary between Ned Lamont and Josh Elliott, you may say, well, I'm going to vote for Elliott. Like, I know he can't win, but I'll vote for this guy. Okay. And you may be a Republican and say, yeah, I know Betsy McCoy can't really win, and the fact that she's 78, I think we need younger leadership, but I'm still going to vote for her. So you were voting for somebody or against somebody by party or whatever. So you tell me, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And this Aaron Stewart scenario here has reinforced something that I've always said about the political process in this country, and especially in this state. And after the break, and we do news and traffic and weather together, I'll reveal that to you, because it's going to be a big I told you so about something, not necessarily about Aaron Stewart or Betsy McCoy or Ryan Fazio, but there is in this whole scenario of slop here, there is a big, big, big and huge I told you so. All right, what's going on in D.C., particularly with this ongoing, we talked about this earlier, this ongoing tit-for-tat, if you do this, I'll do that, redistricting measure here. How does the White House feel about this? Are they tacitly or implicitly winking and nodding to this? Our CBS guy, one of our great staff in D.C., Torian Small, joins us. Torian, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Happy Friday. Doing
happy,
well.
Happy Friday, Tori and Miette. But this is fascinating here. And you, and I know you've been covering this, this back and forth here. Is there any sign, Torian, or signs that this whole thing may be slowing down as far as the redistricting is, or is it picking up, or is it in a stasis now? Where is it?
Yeah, I think emboldened by the recent Virginia Supreme Court decision, and then also the top court of the country, the mm-hmm. U.S. Supreme Court decision, and that ruling on voting based on race, we've seen a swath of southern states, Republican-led southern states, mm-hmm. Look to issue this mid-decade redistricting effort. This is not necessarily unique. It's happened before, but I think the pace at which it's happening and the spread of it is really unique to this moment. And just to remind mm-hmm. Those listening, this all started, really the catalyst was President Trump really instructing Texas to start a mid-decade redistricting effort. That was something that Democrats had decried for a bit, but mm-hmm. ultimately decided to fight fire with fire. So we saw states like California, for example, deciding to counteract any new seats picked up throughout this redistricting effort by taking away essentially Republican-held seats in its state. Mm-hmm. Across the country, we've seen rejections from some states like Illinois deciding to against redistricting in this effort. Indiana was one that was interesting. Republicans there decided against it. Mm-hmm. And many of those same Republicans who voted no on redistricting was primaried out because the president said he didn't like that. So right now, Alabama is what we're looking at. Louisiana, really states that are looking to have that solid red takeover, and what the response would be from Democrats if that happened. This could potentially curb that blue wave that they anticipated and the polling had showed up until now.
Yeah, finally, Torian, you talk about Democratic pushback, and I know Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Leader Jeffries, was very angry the other day. He says we're not going to take it, but what can they actually do? I guess they alluded to doing something at the Supreme Court level, but what real legal options do they have, if anything, here? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, what's funny, there was a Democratic strategy meeting that happened during their committee caucus this week. Yeah. And our take from it, based on people who were in the room, is that they wanted to focus on really ramping up like support of litigation that would go into it. So mm-hmm. at that Supreme Court level, but also they were like, in the reality of what they're seeing, which is losses in some of these cases like Virginia, they just have to ensure that they really focus on messaging, as framing Donald Trump as, you know, this radical change to the country in a negative way. And then also reinforcing some of the election security strategy that they had before the Republican Party made it a tenet of their platform. Mm-hmm. So like having election observers at the polls and, you know, and trying to coordinate with at state and local levels to ensure that Democrats have a presence there, and that would probably inspire more voters to turn out. Ultimately, this is a game of turnout, and yeah. these off-presidential election years is why we see the balance of power shift when it comes to a new administration.
Great stuff. Torian Small, CBS News in D.C. Torian, thanks, man. Have a good weekend. We appreciate it.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks. Chatting right now with one of our go-to guys or gals when it comes to international affairs, national security and all that, Associate Professor of National Security and Poli-Sci at the University of New Haven, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, back to go over a laundry list of stuff here. Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, it's good to be back. Yeah, let's do around the world.
Yeah. All right, let's start. Why not start with China and Taiwan and President Xi and President Trump? And you're watching this from afar, Matt. And are you getting nauseous? Are you smiling? What do you see here?
What I see is President Trump trying too hard. I think that he looks uncomfortable to me. and, you know, sort of distracted with what's going on. But I don't think he's engaged in it. I don't think he's giving a poor performance. I just think that he's on Xi's home court, and it shows.
That's him. You know, I hear folks like you, Matt, mention that all the time. Sometimes just where you are is a big thing in this, right? As far as physical location,
Yeah. No, I think that he's older and the travel is hard, even on Air Force One. And it's a lot to be up there in public and have thousands of people looking at you all the time and the cameras and everything else. And I think, I think you can see that more than when you're Xi and you're there and you're sleeping in your own bed and, the food's familiar, the locales are familiar and all that kind of stuff. And so it just feels to me like the president's not having any fun. We'll put it that way.
You know, from a point of view of both countries, they snipe at each other, Matt, and whatever. But China and the U.S., we kind of need each other, don't we? And we'll get to the Taiwan thing in a second. But strictly for business and for economic reasons, there is a need for these nations to get along. Is there or is there not?
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in the U.S. and China are destined to go to war. I think it's a dumb idea for both countries. And so I think that this is about business. And I think that actually the relationship is pretty stable, and China is going to push and try to extend its ability to influence things in the world. But I think it has no intention of supplanting the U.S. It's not building military capability to be able to operate anywhere on the planet. You know, it wants to operate in its area, but not much further than that. And I think it's interested in controlling things more financially, getting more people to use its currency and things like that.
What about the situation with Taiwan, Matt? And we always hear about this, that, you know, China may one day say, you know, essentially screw it, we're taking it back by force. The U.S. has, at least up to now, said don't do that. Is that another thing, Matt, where the anticipation of danger is out of proportion here or not? What do you think?
I tend to lean in that direction because, look, what do you want Taiwan for? There's the symbolic value of it, which is immense. I think Americans need to remember that Taiwan is the place that the Chinese nationalists ended up when they lost to the Chinese communists after World War II.
Yeah.
So sort of finishing up that story is symbolically important for Xi, for the mainland Chinese government. But you don't want to blow Taiwan up, because then you blow up all the semiconductor plants. And these things cost billions and billions of dollars to build.
Yeah.
So, you know, say what you want, neither of these guys and their advisors are stupid. And so I think everybody's going to work very hard to not end up in that kind of situation.
Let's go to the big issue still, and we'll get to some minor things to wrap up here. But Iran, how does this end, Matt? And do you think the quote-unquote moderates, if that even exists in Iran, what kind of influence do they have here? What do you think the goal is here for both sides, and how does that end?
It depends on where you draw that timeline out to.
Yeah.
We know for years, right, that the Islamic Republic as a regime, the religious regime, has not been popular. We know 70-80% of Iranians are against the regime. The difference is that population doesn't have a capacity to resist the regime's force. And as we've seen this year, right, its willingness to kill tens of thousands of its own citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to separate those things out. So the moderates have a lot of influence, but they don't have guns. That's the bottom line, is that there's no opposition leader that can bring people together and at the same time defend those people against the regime in order to effect some sort of regime change. And that's why it's not happening. It's not because the willingness isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It's because structurally it's too dangerous for most people to go out and do.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven, with us for a few more minutes. Matt, let's go to the part of this that I think is grossly underreported by people in my business, Cuba. and what's going on with Cuba there. Now I'm reading they're sitting down with people in the CIA. They said this afternoon, well, they may consider $100 million in U.S. aid. Matt, I'm joking. What's the goal here? I've said over the past couple of days, is it to bring the mob back in to run the casinos there and the hotels? I mean, are we looking for a redo of the Mambo Kings here? What's the goal here, Matt?
Atlantic City South, right?
Why like, not?
I don't know, but yeah, right. You know, the problem with Cuba is that starving out the population in this way, right? Turning off the electricity in this extreme way, you know, it leaves babies in incubators without electricity in hospitals, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessary to get where you want to get with the regime, right? I think that the regime is weak. And it's sort of on its last legs and playing out that last bit of the story here. And so in most cases, doing things that like this, at this level of extreme sort of actually drags it out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And allows the regime to play, you know, to say we're being attacked and the U.S. is the enemy and things like that and hold on even longer. So I have, you know, problems with the tactics involved here, but I think in the end, you're going to see the collapse of the communist regime in Cuba.
Wow.
That simple.
Final item on the laundry list before we let you go. Things calm now with Venezuela. Is this woman who's their head of chief of state now, the president, is she, for lack of a better term, is she a puppet of the U.S.? Well, how do you look at Venezuela?
I think that things are calm only insofar as the attention has gone elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the hard work of reforming the economy, you know, simply getting American oil companies to invest and things like that, that's not happened because it's much more difficult than you see in the press releases, mm-hmm. right? To put the billions of dollars in to restart wells. When you look out at how much money you might make over several decades on oil, that maybe, you know, we may have already reached peak oil, these kinds of things. And so I think that's what's playing out here and that there's another chapter after this. I don't think she is the one who's going to really lock in the future of Venezuela, but the person after her. She's sort of this in-between figure right now.
Associate Professor of National Security and Poli Sci at the University of New Haven, Dr. Matthew Schmidt. Matt, great to have you on again. Thanks for the rundown. We appreciate it. Take care. Thanks. Appreciate it. Dr. Matthew Schmidt. There you go. We went, we gave you Venezuela. We gave you Iran. We gave you, Cuba. We gave you Iran, China, and Taiwan. How about that? Thanks to our buddy, Dr. Matthew Schmidt from the University of New Haven.